it's taking something that's related to my religion and trying to use it as a club that's very intimidating to little school kids who are forced to see a motto, which it's harmless to me. It's not going to offend me. But well, what about the Jewish kids or the Muslim kids?
Welcome to the BJC podcast as we continue our special series on Christian nationalism. I'm Amanda Tyler, Executive Director of BJC. Last week, we learned about Project Blitz, a legislative strategy to pass bills informed by Christian nationalism. Today, we're going to talk to someone who has stood up to these bills as a lawmaker. Senator John Marty's career in elected public service in Minnesota spans more than 30 years. He currently represents District 66 in the Minnesota Senate. He's been an outspoken champion for religious freedom and has actively opposed measures from the Project Blitz playbook. We had the opportunity to learn about Project Blitz in a prior episode in the series, and I'm delighted today that we have the chance to hear reports from the field about how these measures are impacting one state from a legislator's perspective. Senator Marty, thanks for joining us on the BJC podcast series today.
My pleasure.
So we're talking with you today as part of our series on Christian nationalism. And because that term Christian nationalism has so many different understandings, for this series, I'm asking all of our guests to first give their definition of Christian nationalism. So what does that term mean for you?
Sure. Well, nationalism is obviously promoting something about one's own country, one's nation, and so on. And the Christian nationalist movement and so on and belief is sort of that this country was founded based on Christianity, and that in order, basically, in effect, you got to be Christian or you're not really part of America, which is ends up discriminating against huge numbers of people and has throughout history. And that's why I'm so glad the nation's founders recognize the danger of that and set limits on that. But right now we've had a heavy push by some people who try and attack those who don't agree with, first of all, their own version of Christianity. And they want, in effect, a government sanction of their religion. And so even when they're talking about religious liberty, they're talking about religious liberty for Christians who agree with them. And not for others. They're talking about how we can promote ours, how government should give favors to them, tax benefits to them, but to nobody else. How our holidays, everything else should be based on their version of Christianity. And I think that's a great danger to a democracy. And I think the nation's founders recognized it. We recognize it, but we've got to watch it because there's a heavy push for that these days.
Well, thanks for giving us that context and that frame. I think it helps our listeners as we get into our conversation. You've had a very long career in public service that continues, and you're also the son of Dr. Martin Marty, the highly respected public theologian and scholar of religion and religious history. So I'd love to hear about how your own personal faith has inspired you to pursue a career in elected office, and also how it's impacted you as a public servant.
Sure. Well, I've always felt that, our religious beliefs are core to who we are. It's where we develop what we believe in, our values, everything else. And my faith has always taught me we're supposed to care for others. We're supposed to look for how we can improve life for the other. The concern for other should be paramount. And so I've always seen my sense that my job is not to promote my religion. My job is to promote a better society. And so I've always seen there's a impact. I don't say people should leave their faith at the door when they get involved in politics, but they should be not promoting their faith. They should be promoting the values, the concerns, whatever they believe. And as a Christian, I've always felt that my obligation is sharing and concern for others, other Christians, other people of other faith, people of no faith. And so it's been consistent throughout my career trying to do that. I know that, for instance, when one of the Christian nationalist moves, the putting In God We Trust in the schools, The author of that in our Minnesota Senate was saying how he said, well, you know, 79% of the people, according to some poll he was looking at, were believing in some religious beliefs. And since the majority of them are Christian, that means maybe we should count them all as Christians, you know, all as his kind of Christian. And so when I spoke out against it, I said I was speaking out against it for the 21% who don't believe in any God, who people who are a-religious or atheist or agnostic or whatever, speaking out for them. And I was speaking out for the people of other religious beliefs who might take a push for their Christian God as hostile and not welcoming to little kids in school. So I was speaking on behalf of those who are non-believers, those who believe in other beliefs, and frankly, speaking out on behalf of a lot of other Christians who don't want our religion to be used as a club to bash people of other religions. I don't want my religion to be pushed by government. I want a government that's fair to people of my faith and people of other faiths.
And you mentioned here the legislation in Minnesota that was introduced to, promote the posting of In God We Trust, which of course is one of our national mottos, but to post it in public places like public schools. That is a bill that's out of the Project Blitz playbook and that we've seen pass not only in Minnesota, but in a number of other states. I know there was a little bit of a controversy right after there where bill was passed in Minnesota where one of your colleagues who introduced the bill was on a show, Fox and Friends, and talked about that the opposition to such bills is part of an anti-faith movement. You know, I certainly don't agree with that. And I know you spoke out on the floor from as a person of faith. I just wonder if you'd talk a little bit more about how you approach that In God We Trust posting.
Sure. And part of the response tells a lot about it. My concern was that, first of all, like when that national motto, which is the official national motto since the 1950s during the McCarthy era, when people were trying to use fear to divide out people and suggest, oh, these people are whatever, communists or whatever, where people go after their political opponents by accusing them of not being really American. They developed the In God We Trust motto at that time, which I think was inappropriate, but that is the national motto. It's on our money. It's on other things. It's been on our money predating that. That's for probably 100 years before that. But what I saw with this is not being something used to unite. The author and one of his proponents said, oh, he thinks this will teach respect to people. Kids don't respect their teachers and so on. And somehow by posting this government-sanctioned religious motto, by posting it in the schools, all of a sudden kids are going to be more respectful. Another one said, this is going to unite us. And I said, I don't think this is going to unite us. As a matter of fact, almost half of the Minnesota Senate voted against it after we argued against it. It passed, but narrowly. It's a divisive thing. It's being used to try and they figured, oh, it's going to pass easily because people who oppose it might be scared to vote against it because it will look like they're anti-religion. Well, as a person of strong religious faith, you mentioned my father, and it's a long tradition in our family, Lutheran tradition, actually. One of my great-grandfathers was a Lutheran minister. My grandfather, one of my grandfathers, my father was. My brother is one. I got a daughter who's recently been ordained as a Lutheran minister. So we've had strong religious ties in our family, and it matters a lot to me. But to me, it's not uniting. It's taking something that's related to my religion and trying to use it as a club that's very intimidating to little school kids who are forced to see a motto, which it's harmless to me. It's not going to offend me. But well, what about the Jewish kids or the Muslim kids or the kids who growing up without any religious belief? It's telling them that despite what they're hearing at home, despite what their parents tell them about the loving God they believe in and so on, that no, the school, the teacher, others are going to be forcing this on them. And it's just being used to put the official government sanction on somebody's religion. And I see it so as unwelcoming that as a person of faith, I think I have an obligation to speak out and say, hey, that's not what I want. That's against it. I want religion to be used to unite people, not to divide. And this Christian nationalism is clearly used to separate out people, and you're not a good American like us. And the reason I wanted to comment on the pushback, you mentioned that the author of the bill appeared on the TV show Fox and Friends. He happened to appear on a Sunday morning where I happened to be in church. I came home that morning to a really offensive, obscene phone call accusing me of being anti-religion and anti-God. I thought that was really ironic to come home from church to hear a message on my home message machine accusing me of being anti-religious. And I didn't know where this thing was coming from, but I figured out later in the day because of the emails and calls I'd gotten. And I thought, you know, they're just trying to use this. They were using this as a political weapon to try and say, these people are anti-religious, they're anti-God, they're anti-American. And as somebody who is the absolute opposite of that, who cares about my country, who cares about my religion, who cares about others, I just think that you can see when they say this is about uniting, it's the opposite. They're actually trying to divide. And I think that's really troubling.
You know, this series we're producing is a companion resource for a project called Christians Against Christian Nationalism. It's a website where we have a statement with a set of unifying principles on it, and that anyone who self-identifies as a Christian and who agrees with these principles and wants to stand up against Christian nationalism is invited to join and sign us. And you know, we had more than 10,000 Christians sign up in the first 10 days of the campaign, and we get new signers every day. I'm wondering what impact you think this might have in for state legislators, for states where Christian nationalist legislation might be introduced in the future.
I'm really thrilled that you formed this Christians Against Christian Nationalists, because I think I and others as Christians have a particular obligation to speak out against those who try to use our beliefs to crush others. And I think it's helpful. How will it make an impact? Well, I think in some of the states that passed this In God We Trust and other such Christian nationalist goals, I think one of the ways it helps is that a lot of legislators, well, most of my constituents, maybe 70%, 60% of them are Christian. I don't want to be looking like I'm anti-Christian, so I better vote for it. And they'll say, oh, this sounds generic. It doesn't sound like it's going to be offensive to anyone, so maybe I should vote for it. And when you read the Project Blitz playbook and you see, yeah, this is just one of the first steps. They first go after the, quote, easy issues, the ones that, oh, how can anybody object to that? And to me, no, if there's something wrong, if they're trying to use this the wrong way, we've got to make sure that people of Christian belief, like myself, understand that this is, that having government push and promote my religion may not be a good thing. It may be harmful to my religion. It may be harmful to others who I, and as part of my faith, am told to care about. You know, government-sanctioned religion does some things that they can say is proof that it's good. But, you know, in Norway, I think until a few years ago, the Lutheran Church was the official state church. People were born, all the birth records were kept by the church. They have an officially sanctioned religion there. And so everybody's a member of the church. Nobody goes to it, but I mean, church attendance in this country has been much higher where there hasn't been a government sanctioned thing. And I think that that's always been the case when you have a religion forced or pushed on you by government. It's not a freedom of conscience thing. It's not what religious liberty is about. It's not people being able to make their own choices.
And your advocacy for religious freedom has not been only in opposing bills like the In God We Trust bills, but also in introducing bills, and one in particular, a proclamation celebrating Religious Freedom Day, which is January 16th every year. It celebrates and commemorates the passage of the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom back in 1786. And one of the bills from the Project Blitz playbook has a Religious Freedom Day proclamation, but it really glosses over and in some cases, in some states, has even erased mention of the reason for Religious Freedom Day, and particularly Thomas Jefferson's commitment to a religious freedom for all, ensured by a government that remains neutral towards religion. You introduced kind of a countermeasure, or one really that is more true to the original celebration of Religious Freedom Day. I wondered if you might talk some about your resolution and what inspired you to introduce it.
Sure. I when I was seeing that the Project Blitz people were pushing things like this resolution, I thought, it sounds like they're pushing for exactly what I want, religious liberty. But their push of religious liberty is religious liberty for people of conservative Christian backgrounds or whatever they consider their belief to be. They want to promote, they want freedom for them and to take it away from others. I got a letter from somebody the other day, a Christian nationalist, saying they want to make sure that public officials, we should pass a law saying public officials should not be able to use the Quran or some other religious book for swearing in when they take an oath of office. But the Bible is the only thing we should be able to use. And I thought that sounds right out of the Christian nationalist agenda. And they say they want religious liberty because they feel they as Christians are being oppressed, even though they're trying to use government on their side to oppress others. And the one bit of evidence, a very powerful, very negative quote from 30 some years ago from a strong Christian nationalist talked about how they could use religious liberty in their plan to deny religious liberty to others. A guy named Gary North in 1982, he says, this is a direct quote, "We must use the doctrine of religious liberty to gain independence for Christian schools until we can train up a generation of people who know there is no religious neutrality, no neutral law, no neutral education, no neutral civil government. Then they will get busy in constructing a Bible-based social, political, and religious order, which finally denies the religious liberty of the enemies of God." He couldn't be more blunt about what they're trying to accomplish. He's effectively saying, let's use religious liberty. And that's why they introduced their religious liberty statutes. We should be able to pray in the schools with the teacher leading a prayer. We should be able to do all these things to promote our Christian religion. Therefore, we need religious liberty for that. And then as soon as we get control of everything, then we can, quote, deny the religious liberty of who this guy calls the enemies of God, which are people of other religious beliefs and so on. That's really ironic is a gentle way to put it. But they're trying to use religious liberty to crush others. And I figured, you know, I should introduce a religious liberty resolution that gets back to what Thomas Jefferson was all about. And I think that's so important. I think religious freedom shouldn't be a controversial topic, but I wanted to use it because I really believe in religious liberty. I think the freedom of conscience in the First Amendment's religious liberty is so important. And I think we need to promote that. So a resolution from, in my case, a Christian who is saying, I want religious liberty and not just a special religious liberty for people who agree with me. I want religious liberty for everyone.
And what kind of reaction did your resolution get?
It did not get a hearing. The legislature, the Senate, did not give it a hearing this year. One person who has been active in the Christian right things asked me if I saw you introduce religious liberty thing. I was thinking of doing one too. Will I like yours? And I said, I hope so. I never heard more, so I'm not sure. But I think the importance of Thomas Jefferson's Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom was that we remember the importance of religious liberty for all people of any religious faith and people with none. And I think that was a very clear Jeffersonian push. He wanted it to be freedom for all and people of any religious faith and people with none. And James Madison talked about how politicians use religion to divide us, which is exactly what the Christian nationalists are doing. So I think talking about religious liberty and recognizing the background of what Virginia did so beautifully, so powerfully, first time in history we had such a protection of religious liberty 200 some years ago. It's something we ought to commemorate and remember and study so we remember why it's important to block efforts to use religion to crush other religions.
Yeah, and in this case, you know, of course, the Virginia Statute provided the precursor to the First Amendment and the way that our Constitution uniquely protects religious freedom for all people. I very much think that the history is on our side, on the side right. that our founders meant to protect religious freedom for people of all faiths and for people of no faith at all as well. Whereas Christian nationalists like to use a version of history to help support their cause as well. And I wanted to end on another controversy that came out of Project Blitz and its supporters about funding for the Minnesota Historical Society. I wonder if you might kind of describe what happened there.
That was a really interesting. Our Historical Society, it's the state's official historical society. It's a nonprofit organization. It gets some of its funding from government and some of it from from people who donate to it. I'm a member of the Historical Society. And they run all of our historical sites around the state. And it's a well-respected thing. It's always been seen as nonpartisan and so on, and it is. They go out of their way to teach history. And they have an annual forum in which they have guest speakers on historical topics of historical interest. And they had a nationally renowned scholar coming to speak about a book the person wrote on religious liberty and how the nation was founded not as a Christian nation, but as a nation that respected Christians and others. The whole point, this guy is sort of an expert on not just the Virginia Statute of Religious Liberty, but the First Amendment and the wall of separation that Jefferson declared.
And I will interject that it was Steve Green who yes. wrote Inventing a Christian America, The Myth of the Religious Founding. He was a prior guest on this podcast series. So
oh, wonderful.
Our listeners are aware of Steve Green and his scholarship. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was invited to speak because he's a nationally renowned scholar in the field. And the Minnesota Prayer Caucus, the Legislative Prayer Caucus, wrote a letter saying, we hear you guys have this guy speaking and he doesn't, this is controversial. You shouldn't be doing this. And in the course of several letters, the head of the Historical Society agreed to meet with them. They sent off some more letters basically saying, if you don't cancel his thing, we want to know right away because we're going to be making the legislature determine some of the budget for the Historical Society. And they proposed when they came in the Senate majority, who I'd say probably half their members signed that letter to the Historical Society, basically threatening them that we're going to take away funding if you do this. They didn't tell us that. Matter of fact, when we found out the deep cuts, which would have caused them to, the Historical Society would have had to lay off like as much as 20% of their entire workforce around the state. Really deep cuts in the society's budget, the ones they use to operate Split Rock Lighthouse and all of our historical sites around the state. And we asked them why such deep cuts? We figured they were going to say in the committee hearing, we thought they'd say something about how, well, you know, times are tough, we got to cut budgets. Instead, the author of the bill said, well, because the Historical Society is doing controversial things. And well, what are the controversies? Oh, I can't tell you. So I told, you mean it's a secret controversy? And one other legislator said, well, it was partly that they were recognizing that Fort Snelling, a historic fort in Minnesota, had a number of perspectives. It was an important place for Native Americans before it became a fort for the white settlers. But in other words, they acknowledged that, but they never told us. It was only when we heard from Stephen Green that the society had been threatened with these deep budget cuts if they would not withdraw their invitation for him to speak. And these folks, they're not interested in historical scholarship here. They acknowledged, after they attacked him at great length for how awful he was and how wrong he was, his book was so wrong, they acknowledged they hadn't even read the book yet. One of them said, well, we just got a copy of the book, so we'll read through this. And said, well, they're attacking before they even read his book. It's bizarre, but it's scary to see how when one religion uses its agenda trying to get government to sanction their religious beliefs and crush other religious beliefs, I think that's a time when people of any faith and every faith have to speak out. And in this case of Christian nationalism, it's particularly heavy onus on me as a strong Christian to say, yes, I'm a Christian. I just don't want government being used as a club to take my religion and bash other people with it.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. I think it is really remarkable, the lengths that people will go to protect a version of history and don't want to hear scholarship that tells a different story.
Right, right. We should want to learn from history and scholarship, not try and ignore things that differ from our preconceived notions.
Yeah, and this project, this podcast series, as well as Christians Against Christian Nationalism, we're hoping to raise awareness and for people to have conversations about this, to question some long-held assumptions or statements that they've just taken at face value and to really deeply question them. So I just want to thank you, Senator Marty, for your time today and for your advocacy and for your support for religious freedom for all.
Well, I want to thank BJC for its work and for the new organization, Christians Against Christian Nationalism. I think that's a much needed voice in our democracy. And so thank you for helping people come together and talk about this.
And thank you for listening to the BJC podcast. We're more than halfway through our 10-week series on Christian nationalism, which began at the end of July. New episodes come out each Wednesday, and you can catch up anytime on previous episodes. The BJC podcast is on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you listen. Be sure to subscribe to the BJC podcast so you can be notified when we release each episode. And if you're enjoying the series, take the time to leave us a rating or a review. You can also see a list of all episodes on our website. Visit bjconline.org/Christian Nationalism. And if you want to join us in speaking out against Christian nationalism, read and sign the statement available online at ChristiansAgainstChristianNationalism.org. Use it to start conversations and take a stand in your community. Follow us on social media and let us know what you think of the podcast. We're on Twitter and Instagram at BJC on the Hill, and you can follow me on Twitter at Amanda Tyler BJC. Thanks for listening, and join us on Wednesday for our next episode.